From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I've answered a lot of garden questions in my time as a garden journalist, but nobody has asked more of them than today's guest, who's also the person I've known longer than anyone else on the planet. My baby sister, Marian Roach Smith, is an author and podcaster, a popular teacher of memoir writing, and like her older sister and the grandmother she is named for, a gardener in her own right. She's also the person who coined the phrase urgent garden question, as in, Margaret, I have an urgent garden question, meaning that I needed to deliver on-demand answers to the sister on the other end of the phone line and fast or else. She's here to talk about hand-me-down plants we've shared and garden lessons we've learned, like how her 18 dahlia tubers eventually turn into 175, and that's too many. And maybe we'll ask and answer some more urgent garden questions. So more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Marian Roach Smith is the author of various books, including The Memoir Project, a thoroughly non-standardized text for writing and life, which spawned a whole business at marianroach.com, teaching and coaching memoir writers online through live and recorded classes. She gardens in the Capital Region of New York State, and most important, she's my sister. Welcome, Marian. Hello.
Most important. I love that. I just got a promotion.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. Before we get started, you can keep laughing. Before we get started, we'll have a book giveaway of your memoir project book with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com, because like I do, a lot of what I write, including I wrote a memoir years ago, and I shall have some piece there, that was infused with nature. And many of your clients, their stories, they tell their stories with an infusion of nature, I presume, yes?
Oh, my goodness, yes. I have read and edited manuscripts about dogs who save us, cats who save us, chickens who save us, gardens that save us, trees that save us, and getting out in nature. But perhaps the one that most attracts memoir writers is birds. The birds and yes, the wonder that we discover when we bird. And I love this because it suggests that all of us every day are tempted, provoked, or offered these moments in nature that can elevate our souls. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So I thought it'd be nice to have a book giveaway. So like I said, we'll do that. So let's just give a quick version of the genesis of the phrase urgent garden question. You know, it was a way to break through some silences that had happened between us as sisters during some difficult family years. Yes,
it was. There was a period that was the worst period of my life where we didn't speak for about 3 years. And what was it provoked by? The loss of both of our parents, both of which were ugly and difficult. And our mother in particular, on whom we never agreed. And now I do agree with you about who she was, but I just didn't have all the data when I was a kid. And so when she got Alzheimer's disease, you and I fought valiantly to keep her safe and keep ourselves safe. But at the end of that experience, it was just too much. And we sort of walked away from each other. And it began, literally, the recommunication began when I started gardening. And I found a way to call you with what were mostly gardening questions. Sometimes they were life questions, Margaret. But I remember the carrots, my first Christmas as a married person, pulling carrots from my snow-encrusted garden and calling you and saying, I have carrots. And your joy that I had achieved that, because I wasn't the most, how should we say, custodial person as a young woman. You always were. You were always caring. I raised carrots that I fed my then young husband for Christmas dinner, and everything changed.
Yeah. And in the beginning, the questions that you used the phrase, I have an urgent garden question, to sort of break the silence on the phone.
Yes.
And you know, because it gave me a job. Oh, she needs me. She's asking me a question. I'm going to answer the question. It was simpler than fixing the bigger things at first. And it helped to do that. It made a bridge. But, you know, what happens with gardening questions, you know, it might start out as plant ID. Or, oh, is it time to transplant the tomato seeds outdoors? Or do I wait another 2 weeks? Or, you know, things like that. The sort of, I always say there's the how-to and the woo-woo of gardening. And, you know, the how-to is where we start with our questions, right? We want to get all the how-to down. But they've evolved. The questions evolve. And I think all the gardeners listening will know that. You know, the questions like you just, you know, we're alluding to about the birds, you know, all of the questions that nature provokes in us are bigger also. And so there's, you know, a lot of ahas that come about, you know, sort of life lesson ahas. And one of them is restraint.
goodness. I still don't have, you have, I have none. That's the sister story. Yeah. No, I know restraint.
And I talked about, you know, I hinted at it and we'll talk about it more in a minute. We talked, you know, about your Dahlia tubers that multiplied and so forth. But, you know, when do we have enough and when do we have to stop ourselves from, you know, buying more and more and more plants and things like that? But anyway, so as we've sort of said, you know, I had become the gardener first, and early on you would visit my house and there would be like, you know, by the driveway, I'd have like the sort of half dead things, the rejects, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And who got those?
Mm-hmm. Right. But it wasn't that I was trying to force them on you. You asked for them. And, you know, they were like, I was getting rid of them.
Yes.
And then it would just completely aggravate me to see them months or years later, having risen from the dead at your house, like doing beautifully.
Yeah.
At your house.
Flourishing. Yes. Yeah. The thing that's so lovely about that is that, of course, you're my older sister. So everything you wear, everything you say, everything you do, I want to do. And there's nothing more annoying, I suspect, than having a little sister, but that dims the brakes, dear. So, you know, I see plants that you've, she has that. So, of course, I have the most bizarre houseplants in the world because you like things that are not typical. So that it's very funny when people come to my house, they're like, what is that? And it's a Bowea, of course. But in the garage, I mean, in the driveway of your house, I remember specifically seeing these half dead rejects. And one was a rose that you said, oh, it's dead. And I thought, well, maybe it isn't. Maybe I could. And yes, it was, not only did it thrive, but it's the rose from which my husband carried down a bud, or carried a bud of it to hand to me when I met him at the altar when we got married. And that came from your property.
And from my dead rose.
From your dead rose. You said, right. Oh, that one's dead. And I thought, well, maybe it isn't. And I went home and soaked it and planted it in it. And it provided the bud that I got at the altar of my wedding. It's a beautiful, really interesting, weirdly metaphoric story for all of this relationship that we have. And it's true. I've gotten some great plants from you, but mostly it's the ones that you thought were dead.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so generous. It's wonderful. Yeah,
you really are. You're actually bountiful with your dead plants. Yep.
Yeah. and that we've had other experiences before and since with sort of hand-me-down plants. Our grandmother, as I mentioned in the introduction, was a gardener, the grandmother Marion that you're named for. And she was a great gardener. And, you know, there's pictures of us as kids, you know, sitting under the wisteria trellis at her house and so on and so forth. And she grew this houseplant, Clivia.
Yes.
Kind of looks like a giant amaryllis, but evergreen. And I ended up with, well, our family, our mother ended up with the plant when her mother died. And I ended up taking it when our mother could no longer live in the house. You know, we sold the house and so forth, and when she was too disabled. And so then I think in recent years, I gave you a division of it. Is that what happened?
A live one. You forgot to say you gave me a live
plant. Oh, this wasn't
plant.
Dead. Okay.
No.
Okay, sorry.
This was the first.
Things have improved.
Well, the thing is, what you can't know unless I tell you is how much this meant to me that you trusted me. It said to me, and I really mean this, it said to me that you gave me a plant that was our grandmother's, that I had finally achieved the respect from you that I could be trusted with a live plant.
Right. Not and just I the took, driveway.
I held it like a baby on the way home in the car. My husband was like, okay, this is getting weird. But no, I said, look, look, she gave me a live plant this time.
Yeah. And the thing about the Clivia is our grandmother was like a late Victorian era lady. I mean, oh, our grandmother, she's been dead, I don't know what, 50 years
she's
or
been
something.
Dead 50 years. She was born in the late 1800s.
Yes. Right. And so, you know, this is a plant that she might have had. The plant is certainly 80 years old or seven, you know, or something. So, and this plant could live forever. And so it's really interesting to have this piece of legacy, you know, like that. You know, we think of trees as living a long time, but there are other plants that do too. And so it's kind of great.
Well, the laying on of hands here is what's so extraordinary to me in the garden. I have plants from so many friends and I've given to so many friends. And that's what this is to me. It's this portal, this gardening portal, the knowledge that your friend Marco Polo Stufano gave me standing at a garden tour last year about the Betty Corning clematis. And I went and got one. And I think of him every time I look at it. And it's beautiful and bountiful, just the way he promised it would be. So that even though he didn't give me the plant, he gave me the plant. You know, he gave
right.
me the knowledge.
He tipped you off, right.
He
right.
did.
That was the one to get.
Right. I love that. And he was right. It's perfect for me. It's perfect in the space, but it's an inheritance. And right. we grow up thinking inheritance is like silver services or teacups or whatever. No, it's ideas. And in this case, it's the knowledge that I can grow that too.
Right. And it's a piece of the Clivia of grandma's and so
yeah.
forth.
Love it.
You know, and sometimes it's crazier things. Like I may have our bassinet that each of us slept in as babies, you know, one after the other, a couple of years apart, all those decades ago. I have that stashed in the attic because I can't make myself throw it away. But you have my very first seed starting rig, this big wooden thing that a friend built for me a million years ago, you know, that was just too big for me. And you and your husband and Rex, you know, you adopted it however many years ago when you started doing ambitious seed starting. And I know you bring it into like your office.
Yes.
During the late winter, early spring. And it's just loaded with, you know, it's a stand that holds two tiers, I think, of lights and so forth. Mm-hmm. And you just fill it with, you know, with seedlings, with flats and cell packs and whatever. And that's where your plants get started. So hand me down stuff too.
I love that. And I can't believe you haven't turned the bassinet into a planter because that kind of is on brand for you. Just want to say that out there. I remember your first garden that had bed frames holding roses. And I just remember thinking, oh, she's even more eccentric. And I love that word. I mean that with all love. You know, you got to be even more you when you started to garden, which I found fascinating. And the seed starting trays, you not only gave me the light, the fixture, this incredible A-frame fixture. But then when a friend of yours was done with hers, I got that one too. So my office is filled from whatever, the middle of March to the middle of May with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of seedlings. And people laugh at me, but my babies, I'm here working with them and I can talk to them and, you know, do it. We just make sure they're okay. And this year, 100%, they're in great shape. They're in the ground.
Well, and that's where in seed starting, which is a little more advanced really in gardening than some of the beginning lessons, you know, it's a little harder than going to the garden center and buying six tomato seedlings to transplant is buying the seed packet and doing what you just said, you know.
Yes.
And one of the great lessons is again that word restraint. you know, it's if there's 100 seeds in the pack or however many there are, even if there are only 50, we don't need 50 tomato plants in our gardens, right?
Huh, but really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, cool. Get that straight.
Uh-oh.
You know, in the same way that we don't need a couple of hundred zinnias or
uh-oh. You know, now you just crossed my line. You
yeah.
Totally. goes by.
I know.
My record is 750, starting 750 zinnias. This year, I dialed it down. I only started 500. And
okay.
I just gave a tray to a friend of mine whose son runs a camp in the Catskills, and they're taking the tray there. How wonderful, right? That it's going to be in the Catskills, and the rest of them are in the ground here. And yeah, 500 zinnias. Why? Because zinnias are joy. That's all. They're just zany joy, at least the way Johnny Seeds makes them. I love them.
Right. But it took me a really long time to learn. And it's good if you're going to share them. That's wonderful. But in the early years when I started, I thought you were supposed to do the whole packet. And I,
yes,
in our porch at our house where we grew up, where I was living at the time with our mother, who was increasingly disabled, I, in the sun porch, I started like every seed in every packet that I bought, you know, after reading like one garden book, barely reading one garden book. And it was, you know, a disaster. You know, there wasn't enough light. There wasn't enough. I mean, it was just ridiculous. But so we have to know when is important to have restraint. And you have learned to share the stuff, not to just let it wither and perish and have all of that effort go to waste. I mean, I think you had like a bumper crop of white pumpkin seedlings not long ago, too, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes, I started the whole pack and I've given away about 30 of them. And this is, the restraint is not my forte, and never has been. So I'll start them and try to give them all away. But I do find that the lesson of saving seeds and having the joy of having them there next year is also significant. Sharing seeds, giving 12 pumpkin seeds to somebody, letting them start them, has also started some of my friends on their own gardening journey. But yes, my first year, I had seeds in every windowsill and I failed because I didn't even understand that it had to be like a sunny windowsill. I just thought, okay, every windowsill in the house. And I became hypervigilant. And I also really judged myself pretty harshly for failing at it. And
right.
What we want to do instead is, of course, be reasonable. It's hard.
Right.
But it's
right. And I think, like, I mean, I teased in the beginning, in the introduction about the dahlias as well. You got, I think, what did you get? Like 18 tubers?
I got 18 tubers, 18 different wonderful varieties.
Years ago.
Ten years ago. Yep, 18. Yep. And last year when I dug them up, because I still live in a zone where we're digging them up in the fall, I dug up and then in the spring divided and ended up with 175 viable tubers.
Right.
Which was shocking. It took me a little while. I called you. Urgent, yeah. Margaret, I have an urgent gardening question. I sent you photographs of the wheelbarrows.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Plural, wheelbarrows filled with tubers. And I remember saying to you, Margaret, are they having sex down there?
Yeah, multiplication.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking. They look, what looks like one little sweet potato goes in the ground, and when you come back and get it, it's not alone.
Right. No, it's crazy. It's completely crazy. And didn't you just find a great place to share some of those this spring?
I did. I went and I got a bunch of lovely, clean, brown paper bags to keep it on brand. And I filled them, many, many bags. And I made gift bags and then dropped them off at my CSA, my community supported agriculture farm, from which I've been getting food for 35 years up in upstate New York. And they gave them out as giveaways to people. And it was so joyous because I arrived with them and it was vegetable pickup day. And they let me even greet people and say, here, would you like some free dahlias? And nobody said no, which I really loved. And everybody was kind of, you know, the joy was apparent. And that's the thing about the garden. And I brought a box, a huge box, up to St. Lawrence University because I'm a board member, to a friend of mine who gardens in Rochester, and she couldn't believe it. I mean, it took up the back of my car. Basically, it was very wide and, you know, with all the sawdust in it, but I probably gave her 25 tubers and she was thrilled because she forgot to take hers out the first year. And so that's the thing. It's this sharing across, think of all the plants and how far they've traveled. And while you and I both agree on native plants in our gardens, this, you know, and we want to be sure we don't just share everything, but this is a joy beyond words.
Yeah. You, the garden you share today with your husband, with Rex, includes a relatively new sort of fenced in area because you have deer. It's like a suite of raised beds.
Yes.
And one of the, and I don't know how you figured out where to position it or whatever, but one of the great things that to me is like one of the garden lessons, one of the answers to urgent garden questions that you seem to have learned is that you placed it in a spot, this garden, this enclosed garden, where you have a great view of it from various key windows in your house. And I always think, you know, if we're going to start a new garden, look out the window first, go inside and look out the window. I think that's one of the big ahas of gardening. And you've placed your primary garden, this little sort of wonderland inside a fence with all these raised boxes and so forth, you know, where you can really look at it and admire it and enjoy it, you know, when you're inside making supper or when you're, yep, you know, reading a book in your bedroom or whatever, you can see it.
One of the things that I love about gardening is the realization as we get older that you can continue to do it if you make it hospitable to the body you have now. So the body I had when I started was the body that could go all day. I had a horse. We would fill the pickup truck with loads and loads of manure, maybe 3 loads a day when I was starting the gardens. I mean, we were just indefatigable. Not so much at this age. So putting a garden, pivoting to a place where I said, first of all, it has to be safe. So our original garden back there was not safe. It had slate. We made the mistake of slate walkways and, you know, we made every mistake. This time it's safe. I can sit on the raised beds. They're quite high. They're 3 timbers high. And then I put it in a sight line where I will be aging. That's the bedroom where I will be, you know, if I'm very, very fortunate, where my life will end. And even thinking that way, and I'm comfortable thinking that way now, it's what would I like to be looking at in right. the end? And that is a recognition that I'm proud of. Instead of being afraid of, I say right here, looking out at these plants that have come to me from all over and that I have shared with others, this is where I want to be.
Yeah. We have maybe 4 minutes left, and I wanted to just talk about some differences in our sort of plant palettes. You know, you have a lot more flowers. You've confessed to your 9,000 zinnias and 40 billion dahlias and so forth. And I'm not as much of a flower person as a foliage person, but one thing that you have that was there when you got there to the house many years ago, you had a redbud or two, a Circus, yes, native redbud tree, and you've kind of moved some more around, like some seedlings and so forth, right? I mean, that's one of the trees that you really love.
The wonder of the redbud reduces me or heightens me to tears every year. The way that it, the way that it produces the color and then follows with those heart-shaped leaves transfixed me when I first saw the first one, our first spring in this house. We had two, and both of them were in very rough shape. And a local man made a crook, like a crutch for the one trunk that was growing sideways out of the ground. And that, God, it's still there. It's 30 years, that thing, and has come back to life. And the other one, he cabled a couple of the trunks together, and that's thriving. And so what I've done over the years is when I see them and they love to just, you know, spontaneously volunteer, I dig them up and I put them where I want them. And now I have 8, and my next door neighbor literally stopped over this spring and said to me, I've never seen anything more beautiful. It was so kind of him. They were all in bloom. They're ringing the property, and they are doing their best to provide the kind of joy that trees can provide. I'm so proud of them. I love them so much. I go out and hug it regularly because it's just a gift in my life.
Yeah, it's like my old apples that were here.
Yes.
You know, I just have the same relationship with them. They're like supposedly 150 years old. And, you know, they're just like friends, you know, they're just so important.
And they both have, and they, yours have that like their arms are out, you know, they yep. feel like they're saying, come here, let me embrace you. I love your apple trees. And yeah. I also love how the care you've given to them all these years. They are thriving because of it.
So do we have a 60-second urgent garden question? Anything urgent that you need to know right now?
Well, I'm having a little struggle with the chipmunks eating things. And so I don't kill anything. I trap things and take them someplace they might prefer to live. Let's just say, which, you know, maybe is, and I don't take them far, which is probably my fault, but I'm all, you know, it's living with the drama of the elements, let's say, is always what I come to you about, crying when the frost comes and sort
or
of
the deer
or the deer. So just, I think it's just that it's how do we develop the acceptance with the things that are inevitable that are going to take our gardens.
Yeah. And as much as I know about gardening, I don't know the answer to that urgent garden question, except for there are forces bigger than us at work all the time. And I just try to come to a place of peace with that, I guess. But
you've always said that to me. I mean, I remember you calling me when there was a heron sitting in your pond, and and he was beautiful and he was mighty. And
but he was eating all the frogs.
But he was eating all the frogs. And there's an acceptance that I think you and I, to circle back to where we started, we didn't accept each other for one period of our lives. And now we not only accept each other with great joy and share our plants, but there's an acceptance that there are forces larger than we are. And that's why you build a garden right outside your window, because someday this is all going to be over and you want to be in a beautiful place. Yeah.
Well, it's good to talk to you. And I expect I'll be getting some more urgent garden questions at any moment on the telephone. So thank you for making time. And as I said, we'll have a giveaway of your book, The Memoir Project, with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. And I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you. You're the best sister a person could have.
Oh, thank you very much. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.